Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have done all your amendments.
We need to do the rule. Senator Perkins, would you come up here, please? Senator Perkins, do you have a motion?
Well, I do, but I think I have to get a gift a copy to this weekend or something like that.
Yes.
Okay.
We are.
Yeah, right. 105. I don't see his gun, though. I'm sorry.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, similar if I were to go into rules on our bills on second reading.
Yes, sir, we are.
You don't have a microphone on.
Oh, you got Paul's. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Senator Barnard.
I got Senator Barnard. Senator Barnard allowed me to use his mic. I thank you, Senator Barnard. Mr. President, I move to suspend rule Senate Rule 8-1B for the purposes of allowing members to speak to Senate File 71. 121, 23, 87, and 92 for more than 5 minutes on second reading. And the purpose of that, and so what it is that there's only a limit as to time, and that time would be 15 minutes per bill. And that and it would still have the, and that any senator would still not speak more than twice on the same question without leave of the Senate.
Point of order.
Senator Office.
Thank you. On the proposed motion, I believe the motion, if I understood it correctly, was to only suspend 8-1-B, but A is the part of the rule that specifically states that a senator may only speak twice. So I. If I heard you correctly, I believe you would want to suspend all of 8-1, and then the rest of the motion would stand to accomplish what I believe the majority floor leader laid out.
President, I think he's correct. So I'm moving to suspend. I'll say it again. Moving to suspend Senate Rule 8-1A and B during today's second reading of the Senate files for the purpose of allowing only these bills, Senate File 71, Senate File 121, Senate File 23, Senate File 87, and Senate File 92.
Okay, members of the Senate.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, the motion's been seconded. Members of the Senate, this is requires two-thirds vote. It's not debatable, as I understand. Oh, we could debate the rule changes. Anybody would like to speak? That's certainly an option. There being none, so everybody understand what we're voting on. We're voting on a proposed rule change to those specific rules, and that will allow further debate on five specific Senate files that, because of the late hour Friday, we did not finish committee of the whole. Okay, everybody understand that? You ready for the question? Question being called for. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll? Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercutt?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebap?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
By your vote, you voted to suspend rule number 8-1A and B for the purpose of discussing those five Senate files. That is passed. Okay, bills on second reading. Senate file 23, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 23, possession of non-plant form marijuana.
Senate file 23, having read two separate times. The question is, shall Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection. You can object, Senator Office?
Mr. President, I object.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on Senate file 23, Senate file 23 is kind of an old friend. We've been looking at this for quite some time on how we should best define edibles and non-plant form marijuana. When we look at this particular piece of legislation, Mr. President, it is very similar to one that we considered last year, but it adds two new definitions. It, on page 3 is where we see those definitions. So the first that we see in G as far as the definitions are, for a controlled substance listed that is commercially packaged as a drinkable liquid in a jurisdiction where such commerce is legal, no more than 36 fluid ounces. So let's address that one for a second, Mr. President. What we're trying to do is close loopholes. But first and foremost, any liquid that's packaged with less than 36 ounces, no matter what the concentration is going to be legal. Any liquid greater than 36 ounces, assuming that it's packaged commercially in some place where this is legal, is going to be illegal. The ability to circumvent that, and in fact circumvent the rest of this page, using that statute alone is limitless. I can simply take something I purchase in another state that is in a package that is 42 ounces and pour it into a jug. At that point in time, it's no longer illegal.
Point of order. Point of order. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, several of us are looking for this amendment. Do we have an amendment?
No. What he has done is he's objected, and he's having the right to speak to this particular bill. And, of course, you can, if you wanted to kill this bill, you could ask for a vote and kill it. That's certainly within your purview, but you just wanted to further explain. So go ahead, Senator Rothfuss. So you have a time limit, by the way.
I do. And I know that the diligent timekeepers aren't counting that objection against my...
They are, because you still have a minute and a half from the other day that I'll let you go overboard.
All right. Duly noted, Mr. President. So the difficulty then of circumventing the G provision is as difficult as buying a one-gallon jug and then filling it with whatever liquid substance I feel like filling it with. In fact, I could take the resin. A resin is basically a dried form of something. We see that in H. A resin of the material, I can only have 3 grams of. 3 grams is a very small amount, certainly, of a resin material because it's very concentrated. What does it take to turn a resin into a liquid? Water. So I take my jug that I bought a few minutes ago and put resin in the jug and fill it with water and shake it up. I have now circumvented G and H. This idea that we can come up with mass basis where we're not talking about the active chemical that is illicit, but the mass of the material surrounding it is entirely unworkable. It is both easy to circumvent and easy to cause problems for the law enforcement community. And then finally, we see in the J provision for a controlled substance listed in a form not described, no more than 3 ounces. And rather than being redundant, I would just ask the chamber to recall the robust debate we had last year about the idea of whether or not I take one of the gummy bears, which is now legal, regardless of the concentration of the gummy bear, and put it on top of a 4-ounce brownie. Before I put the gummy bear on top of the brownie, I am holding two individual legal substances under this definition. But the moment I put the gummy bear on top of the brownie, I'll be a felon. Mr. President, I understand that we've been wrestling with this issue for quite some time. There are legitimate concerns here, but this legislation does not solve the loopholes we had last year. Instead, it creates several new and fun loopholes that will easily be exploited by anybody, even while high, that wants to. I can mix the brownie into the gallon of water, liquefy it with a blender, and then I'm clear, as long as I don't have it commercially packaged. I mean, this is not a step in the right direction to provide clarity for the courts. This is a step in the opposite direction to provide loopholes for the people we're concerned with. I would ask the body on third reading to reject this. This is not quite ready for prime time, and I think we need to go back to the drawing board and think this through. Mr. President, I would say once again, we understand that it's difficult, but it's doable on a chemical basis.
Okay. Senate File 23 had me read two separate times. Shall the question? The question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Heard no objection. So ordered. Senate File 71. Second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 71. Stand your ground.
Okay, there are amendments. Will the reading clerk please read those amendments in?
Senate File 71, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 19. Senate File 71, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 3.
And before we get to Senator Perkins, to point of order, go ahead, Vice President.
We're only allowed one amendment on the floor at a time, so to read two in is probably not correct.
Okay, then rescind that second one. I was trying to move things along. Your point of order is well taken. Before we begin the debate on the second reading amendment of 1 to Senate File 71, Senator Perkins, is this not one of the bills that we suspended the rules on to have the debate provision allowed to continue? Okay. Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move, and we're on Senate File, we're talking on Amendment 2, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank
second
you.
Second reading amendment number... Two. Number one.
We're doing I thought we read in two, and I would prefer to do two first if we may. No. So if we've read, which one have we read in, Mr. President?
We have read in both, but in the order
okay,
they were presented to me, we're only doing second reading amendment number one that's been read in.
Okay. Mr. President, I'd like to lay back Senate File amendment number one to Senate File 71 until we finish with and deal with number two first.
Without objection, so ordered. Now we're on second reading amendment number two. Will the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number two, page one, line three.
Now, Senator Perkins, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 71 and ask the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I will note that I have received a note that this amendment will be considered by certain organizations as anti-gun, and I've been asked to pull it. And it will be scored as such and reported as such. But you know what, Mr. President? I'm not pulling this amendment, and I move this amendment, and I ask the body to vote aye. What you have here with Senate File 71 and what we're doing, I have distributed to you you'll find it on your desk. It says Senate File 71, and you'll see the top is scratched out. And ultimately what this amendment does is moves the bill into that direction, and that should have been distributed out here, I do believe. But what this bill does, if you go into your Senate File 71, it changes some lines in the Act, and then what it goes, if you go to the actual File 71, then it comes through and it'll delete all of page 2 and lines 1 through 10, on page 3 of Senate File 71. The reason that we're doing that is that removes the procedural, the immunity from arrest. And it also removes the immunity from being investigated. And it removes in C, you'll see that on the bottom of page 2, subparagraph C, a person who uses reasonable defensive force. She says that's been removed, but it'll come back later in amendments to 6-2-602A, which is added later. And it also believes, it also removes then D. Then what happens then is then section, what is now section 2 becomes section 1, and it simply say that we're amending Wyoming Statute 6-1204 and 6-2-602. And what those are in my instruction, when I was working on this amendment, I asked our LSO staff, Mr. President, to go out, and I said, let's find out what other states have done successfully with Stand Your Ground. Let's find out what's passed, not just what's been proposed. Let's find out what's passed. Let's find out what other states are doing successfully. And so we went out, and I'll tell you that this is essentially a hybrid between our sister states of Florida, West Virginia, and Oklahoma. It'll be somewhat similar to what they're doing in their statutes with Stand Your Ground. So then we get to what we're doing in Section 6-1-204, Immunity for Civil Action for Justifiable Use of Force. It's important to point out that 6-1-204 already exists in our statute. We already have civil immunity if you use reasonable self-defensive force in your habitation or under the Castle Doctrine. We already have it, but here we're going to expand a little bit. And so you can see the changes there to 6-1-204A at the bottom of page 3. And so you can see what the changes are to the existing statute. And if you turn the page to page 4 on Senate File 71, we delete subsection B, which is this objective standard that has a subjective nature to it. One of the things that you're talking about in using reasonable force is it's an objective standard. And what that means, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, is that you have the obligation to do as a reasonable man or a reasonably prudent man or woman would do under the same or similar circumstances. And so we'll find that that reasonable man standard, we'll find that again in 6-2-602A. We'll find it reappear there. Then you get to the civil action for C. Again, we still have the civil action, the immunity for civil action. And what we're doing in B, which wasn't in the previous statute, is providing a pretrial opportunity to assert your civil immunity from a civil action. We're providing the pretrial opportunity to have this hearing about defensive force. And so you end up able to file a motion with the court. This is in a civil action, not a criminal action. But file a motion with the court asserting that the person used reasonable defensive force under 6-2-602. And if you find that if somebody files a motion after that hearing, and if he proves by only preponderance of the evidence that he or she used reasonable force as defined under 6-2-602, then they will be immune from civil suit. So it provides that civil procedure to have that pretrial hearing in the event of that. Then if you go to C, then it talks about the award of it. And what we do, the court will only in this case, and the next amendment will deal with this in a different way, but it also will, the court will award reasonable court costs arising from a person's use of reasonable defensive force pursuant to 6-2-602 if the court finds that the defendant is immune from civil action under subsection A of this section. So it removes the attorney's fees, court costs. We're going to have a chance to talk about that in a second, but this one does remove that, and we'll talk about that again in a subsequent amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, you have the latitude. You have 5 minutes if you want to continue with your time now.
Yes, I do. I'd like to finish the explanation.
Okay, continue.
Thank you, Mr. President. So then you go to, if you go to page 5, then you find that we come back and we're inserting those paragraphs. And that will essentially become, those are additions to Section 6-2-602. All we've done is under paragraph A, we've now added in 6-2-602, we've added subsection A, which reads, the use of defensive force is reasonable when is the defensive force that a reasonable person in like circumstances would judge necessary to prevent an injury or loss, and no more, including deadly force if necessary, to prevent imminent death or serious bodily injury to the person employing the deadly force or to another person. So we're adding that into existing statute and provide that reasonable force, that if you use reasonable force necessary to repel or to respond to the force you have, and including deadly force if it's to prevent imminent death or serious bodily injury to you or someone else, then we've got that defined in there as reasonable defensive force. You see the other changes to the existing statute, some of those are mostly just conforming, and you see what's going on there. And then the other thing we do, if you go back down If you get down, we're also adding a new subsection E. And so this will not apply if someone's approached the confirmation, but we add this, that any, and this is the basically the what you'll find, and this is very similar to what has been passed and is law in, like I said, Florida, Oklahoma, and West Virginia. So the new subsection E reads, a person who is attacked in any place where the person is lawfully present shall not have a duty to retreat before using reasonable defensive force pursuant to subsection A of this section, provided that he is not the initial aggressor and is not engaged in illegal activity. So what we're doing here is providing that if you're at some place you have to be and you're attacked, whether you're threatened, someone's brandished a knife, you're attacked in some way, or you're that you're able to use that reasonable defensive force to repel that. So, but what it doesn't do is protect you if you're the one who starts the altercation. If you provoke it, you're not going to be protected under this. But if you are defending yourself, you've been threatened with serious bodily harm or imminent death, you have the right to use your force and circumstances, even deadly force, to do that. Of course, the other one is you can't do that if you're engaged in illegal activity. So if you're in the middle of a drug transaction or some other illegal activity and you do it, you're not going to be able to take advantage of that if you're involved in illegal force. And then if you turn to then the other thing we do is we add a definition of deadly force at the bottom. We add a new section F. Romanet 3, which is deadly force, means the force that is intended or likely to cause death or serious bodily injury. So we provide that definition. So we do that. That's the substance of the amendment. If we do that, it'll read very much like there should be a bill this is kind of phoned in, although I didn't find the one on my desk, but it'll end up reading very much like that bill and essentially like that bill. I would stand for questions. I would urge you to give it serious consideration. At the end of the day, I believe it's very, very close to what Wyoming law is now, our common law. The LSO worked very hard on that. Like I said, my instructions were to do as little damage to existing law as we could, but to make sure that it folds in and that we are doing our best to codify what the common law is now with respect to self-defense. And quite frankly, the other thing that's still disturbing about these is that even under the existing law, and this, I don't think this bill changes it, but even under existing law, the problem I've always had with this, ladies and gentlemen, is simply that there's never an obligation to de-escalate. And this doesn't change that. There still is no obligation to de-escalate. So even if the opportunity comes, the law of Wyoming is, and I think this leaves it in place, that once that chain of events acts, there is no duty for anyone to stop, to take a minute, even if there's an opportunity to de-escalate. There is no requirement, either under existing law nor under this bill as it's amended, to de-escalate. But that's what the law is, and I think it is a fair requirement to say that our statute should provide individuals with the ability to go and look and understand what the law, what their duty is without combing case file. And I think it does that, particularly if you look at our definitions that are now going to be contained in 602, 602A, the language they're talking about, defensive force, and E, which then is really a very clear statement that provides or has a very clear statement of what stand your ground is. So with that, I'd ask you for favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, Senator Perkins, you've used 11 minutes, so you've got still some time left, just to remember that. Okay, Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to be against this amendment. I would like the body to vote against it. It guts the bill. I want to go back to where we were last week. There was a case about a lighter. If a man shows a lighter, that somehow somebody's going to shoot him and he's going to be okay. The context was totally out of it. It wasn't even in context. What if the man had a lighter and was coming up to shake your hand, and he was trying to smoke light a cigarette? Well, obviously we can't shoot him. But what if he had a Molotov cocktail in the other hand? and he was threatening obscenities at you. I mean, the truth is that the courts and the juries look at these things. And what we're lacking here is we haven't had any discussion on Drennan versus Wyoming, or even Mr. Hare versus Wyoming. And these are cases where in the case of Mr. Drennan, 3 years of his life are gone because he was imprisoned. And they even had video or audio where his assailant was saying, "I'm going to kill you." And the question in the court was, "Well, why were you wearing a gun to Mr. Drennan?" And so it always comes back to they get these jury instructions, but they're able to twist it around. And that's what this bill is for, is to stop the abuse by prosecutors who just want a notch on their belt. There was the mention made that we shouldn't have to look at case law, where the common man shouldn't have to look at case law. But that's what we are not doing in here. We are not looking at case law, and then we're deciding that the system is fine and it's okay to lock a man up for 3 years and ruin his life. I stand against this amendment. I don't think we should crush and bankrupt people. We did not take the ability of the courts or the juries to stop unlawful action against the amendment. I hope that the body follows me with that. Thanks.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like a little bit more explanation from the sponsor on two things that I'm curious about, and I know he's limited on time, so we'll see how quickly he can do those when he stands up next. But the first is this concept of a de-escalation requirement, and one of the things I was interested in was whether other states had something along those lines in their stand-the-ground laws, if there isn't a model out there for if you have a clear opportunity to de-escalate and you don't take that opportunity, that puts it under a different light. I was wondering if any other state had found some clever language along those lines. And the other is, it's still unclear to me with this amendment, and I know it was discussed, but I don't have a vivid picture of how it would play out from the civil side based on the new language. And it sounds like there would be a pre-hearing, but otherwise the process would be as it currently is beyond that addition. And I don't know whether there's a presumption implied for the civil hearing with this amendment in place, or whether the presumption is as is current, where you've got the preponderance of evidence. So if we could get more clarification, I don't know if there's anybody else who has a clear answer to those that could take some time on behalf of the majority leader, but I would appreciate those answers. And honestly, if I can help by yielding some of my time to the majority leader, I would do so.
Yeah, I'm going to have the latitude to allow that to proceed. We'll also have for this debate, you know, we have the limitation of two times. I think the rule that we talked about said you could have more than two times to talk about this. So correct. We will do that. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I was curious. I'm going back to the example used by the person who spoke to the senator who spoke two times ago, and because I was the one that brought up the analogy of the lighter, somebody with a lighter. And that was in reference to page 4, Amendment B, I'm sorry, paragraph B at the top of the page, and that is where somebody is wrong, is just flat out wrong. Somebody's holding a lighter, and this guy thinks it's a gun, he thinks he's threatened, and he shoots him. So I don't know how that necessarily applies to this amendment. But the other question I have is, we've heard a couple of times now of the circumstances of somebody who used, depending on your interpretation, reasonable force and was prosecuted for it. I was wondering if anybody has any statistics on the number of times people have used reasonable force to defend themselves in the state and have not been prosecuted. Is that fairly common? Are these two cases out of the ordinary? Have there only been two cases in the state, and these are the two, and you have rogue prosecutors all over the state prosecuting people? That doesn't strike me with the number of prosecutors that I've met. So I'm just wondering how what the odds are here, or what the statistics are of number of times that people have had to use reasonable force to defend themselves and not been prosecuted.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, this is a long and very involved amendment. It's going to take quite a while to work ourselves through it, and I would think that there's nuggets of things in here that maybe just restate what was stated in the bill in a different paragraph, but I think in some places there's areas that upon further review that, you know, we could spend a lot of time deleting and going through. For my time, Mr. President, I would hope that we'd have a good discussion of this in different areas, but I'd like to see this amendment brought back kind of in a multiple amendments, so you can vote on each one of these things in a different way rather than trying to digest particularly a pretty much a whole rewrite of the bill. So I guess in particular, Mr. Chairman, going into that, the deletion on page 4, lines 2 through 6, that's language that's almost taken out directly from the jury instructions. And as far as self-defense, that if you really believe that somebody's coming after you, you have the right to self-defense. And if it's found out that you were just wrong, you still have that defense that you can offer. And so that part, unless it's restated someplace else along the same lines as what 2 through 6 is, then we're actually, by statute, removing some of the protections that we already have.
Further discussion. Senator Bouchard.
Mr. President, I just can't say enough that this is just confusing, this bill. And I will chime in that Mr. Majority Leader had stated the national organizations are watching this bill and are watching how this moves forward, and it's going to have consequences. And I'd like to call for the A's and O's.
A's and A's have been called for. Okay. Anybody else wish to speak? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. To get back a couple of your questions, and, you know, Mr. President, I told myself a long time ago that I was going to come down here and do what I thought was right, regardless of whether a special interest group thought I was right or not. And so I come to you with that. And but to go back, to get back specifically to your question, the case that the man spent in 3 years in prison, if I remember the facts of that case right, so ultimately he did prevail on appeal. It was a tragedy that he spent 3 years in prison. He didn't have to. They came back and they gave a jury instruction. They got a new trial, and there was a jury instruction. He was acquitted, I think, is the way that eventually worked, because they gave a wrong jury instruction. The jury instruction had to do with he had a duty to retreat, because there had been this kind of a lull in the action, the way it was, that the guy was threatened with the gun. The guy went out to his car and got the gun. They came back and returned fire, and so there was an act about whether or not this guy had an opportunity to he had a duty to retreat during this break in the action, and so the case was overruled, and it came back, and the answer was no, you didn't have a duty to retreat. I don't remember if it was a retrial or if it was dismissed, but ultimately it went back and he was let out because, again, the jury was misinstructed that there was a duty to retreat when there wasn't. So getting back to specifically to the good senator from Lingle, and you go to look at the language at the top of page 4, a person who uses reasonable defensive force may be wrong, that language. And I believe that language is not word for word, but the restatement you find in is in the new language. It's if you look, it's on line 7. I think it's on, was it page 2 or 3 of the amendment, where you have A, where it says after page 5, after line 5, insert, and you have the subsection A. And that's the crux of a defensive force. The use of defensive force is reasonable when it is the defensive force that a reasonable person in like circumstances would judge necessary to prevent an injury or loss, and no more. including deadly force if necessary to prevent imminent death or serious bodily injury to the person employing deadly force or to another person. And what that means is if you're in the dark alleyway and somebody's got something in their hand that you think is a gun, and you pull it up and you end up shooting them or hitting them with a baseball bat or stabbing them with a knife or whatever you do to them, if under the circumstances that a reasonable person would believe, yes, that I would have thought that my life was in danger under those circumstances, then that's reasonable force. What it's not saying is that you can have some kind of delusion that your life is in danger and that somehow you're threatened and shoot somebody. That's a subjective standard, and it doesn't require that. And that's not what the law should be, nor what the law is. It's an objective standard. What would an ordinary, if an ordinary prudent person would have thought in that dark alley under those circumstances, with those threats and that object in his hand, that was a reasonable use of force, then that's what stand your ground is about. And you see that in these officer-involved shootings. How many officer-involved shootings have we looked at over the last little while, for the last two or three years, where officers had the victim of the shooting had something in their hand. It wasn't a gun, but the officers were nevertheless...
You have a minute left.
Thank you. And they were nevertheless found to have acted appropriately, because it's... You apply that reasonable standard. Under the circumstances, was that reasonable? And so, that I think that's the crux of the bill. At the end of the day, there still is no duty to retreat. I did not find any other language. I didn't ask anybody looking for any other language, because that's not what the law is in Wyoming. The law in Wyoming is you have no duty to retreat if you're where you're legally entitled to be and you feel threatened. You have the right to meet that force with appropriate force. And if the force is enough to inflict death or serious bodily injury, then you have the right to use deadly force. You have no obligation to break off. You have the ability and the right to defend yourself and those around you. I don't think this bill and the amendment leaves that intact.
Okay, time. Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And yep, I just pulled out the jury instructions here. And what the good majority floor leader put in subsection A is almost, it's not word for word, but it's certainly very, very similar to the jury instructions. But the last sentence of jury instructions were left off. And I'll just read the last sentence. If a person so confronted in acts of self-defense upon such appearance of danger from honest belief that the right of self-defense is the same whether the danger is real or merely apparent. And that's what I talked about as far as that if we pass the bill out in this regard, then we're losing that protection that we have in jury instructions right now. That if you truly believed, which is, and you had the honest belief that you were threatened, that is a defense. We put that in statute. The amendment takes it out of statute. Takes it out of the statute that's proposed. And in doing so, I think it would perhaps cloud future jury instructions that perhaps you would lose that particular right that's already available to everybody in jury instructions, because we're setting precedent in statute. So we need to be very careful what we do pass, that we don't lose something we already have.
Okay, anybody else? Senator Kinski, jump in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. I'll start off by saying I'm pro-gun, I'm pro-Second Amendment, I'm pro-stand your ground, I'm pro-American, I'm pro-Constitution, I'm pro-police, I'm pro-law enforcement, and I'm pro-Wyoming. And we have a rule in the Wyoming Senate that says we are not allowed in debate to talk about what somebody might do down the hall if we do this, or what the executive might do if we vote that way. These notes are in violation of our obligation to debate fairly without any duress what we think is the right thing, notwithstanding what somebody else thinks they might do to us. That is our obligation by Constitution. And so let's go ahead and set the notes aside, and let's go through the bill. First, and I urge an affirmative vote on the amendment if for no other reason than that. But with regard to page two of the bill, it befuddles me how striking that is anti-gun, because it says the police officer cannot arrest unless there's probable cause. Well, that's the law now. A policeman can't just arrest you because he feels like it. That's already the law. So striking it out does no harm. On page three, striking out this right to a pretrial hearing, I could go with that or not go with that. The problem is, I don't know what defense attorney in his right mind would ever advise a client to go in and do that, because that's your whole trial. I mean, as a practical matter, why would you go in on that kind of hearing? And then the balance of the amendment with regard to what is a reasonable person, we've debated that over and over and over again on that floor, and this floor, in the context of abuse and battering. So there are those advocates for victims who say the standard should be the victim believed she was in fear. Well, the Supreme Court said you can't do that. It says it has to be based on what a reasonable person under those circumstances would believe. It's called the reasonable person standard, and in the law they call that an objective standard. Rather than just what you happen to believe, it's what somebody believes is reasonable. So I'm completely lost as to how that is anti-gun in any way. The other thing is, I'm afraid that this grant, so-called grant of immunity, would operate to the detriment of our police officers, who, after all, have a job to do under very, very difficult circumstances. The other problem that I have is there's nothing in here about an innocent bystander or a defendant that has a violent background. We're completely silent on that. So I would urge an affirmative vote on the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. President.
For your third time, but that's okay because we suspended the rules, so have at it.
Mr. President, I just want to clarify because we brought up the prior cases and probably not explained them properly. We've had a case, Drennan, where that man was actually threatened. He used force. He was put in jail for 3 years. He finally did come back, and he was able to appeal and win. You know, we ruined a man's life doing that. I mean, altercation took place on a rental property. I would be amazed if he still had that rental property today after getting out of jail. The other case that I think was mentioned, and that would be the Hare case, which happened a little over a year ago. I mean, he was imprisoned and in jail. The Supreme Court overturned it on a jury instruction, but it's going to go back to trial in April. So it's just more of the same. We're going to drag these people through the mud, crush them, bankrupt them, ruin their lives away from their family. I mean, if we're going to do this, we've got to look at these cases and actually explain what happened in these cases, not just go, the system works. We keep coming back to legislation that the system works fine. I don't think so. I think all these cases prove it. There's been some wins, yes. The Chase Bosser was a win when the jury said, when they said, we're not going to convict him. But the problem was he had to get drugged through it, even on the outside, we knew it was a self-defense case. So we're always coming back to dragging people through the mud. Because and look, some of these questions that you look at these cases, with the Drennan case, well, why did you have a gun on Mr. Drennan? And that was a judge saying that, as if somehow that made him a criminal, just because he had a gun. Many of us have guns on, and there's so many people in Wyoming that have guns on. If it becomes, if we allow the juries to be, I want to almost say tampered, but with that kind of words that somehow a man was a criminal because he had a gun on. And that's where we come back. That's why this bill is so important, and that's why I'm against these amendments. Thanks.
Okay. I think we're ready to vote. The ayes and nays have been called for. We're voting on second reading amendment number 2. To Senate File 71. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Bonflader?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate Bill 71 has passed. Second reading amendment number 1. Senator Perkins, do you want to withdraw that one or do you want to bring it up before we read it in? Read it in. Reading clerk, please.
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 1, page 4, line 19.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 71 and ask the body to vote however you think is appropriate. What this does is if you go to the, this is just simply about the way that the bill is with the action we just taken, is so you'd be at this point of whether or not in a civil action the and you were successful in asserting self-defense in a civil action, whether or not you would be able to recover attorney's fees and court in addition to court costs. And so this amendment would remove the ability to recover attorney's fees and court costs. So this would put it back to what's called the American rule, which is that every party generally bears, except for court costs, bears their own costs. And so this would say that if you were a defendant in that and you had used reasonable force and the jury finds that you had done that or that you prevail in that motion that says that you have the ability that takes you the English rule where the loser basically pays the court costs the other one. And we do that all over the place. But under Wyoming law, unless you have this provision in here that you can recover attorney's fees, you can't otherwise recover those. And so vote this however you want to vote it up or vote it down. But I just wanted to have it was in the bill. It is in the bill still that the party that prevails at that civil action, or if you prevail in defending yourself that used reasonable force, you can collect attorney's fees and costs and things like that from the person who sued you. And so to vote this up or vote this down, I just thought we should have that opportunity to just talk about that. It really, in my mind, is a little bit of a separate issue than the rest.
Further discussion, Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is another amendment that just says that it's okay to take these people and victimize them, and they don't have recourse. And if, you know, we're looking at this one in a bubble, because in states that don't have immunity on civil issues, we see that what happens is the family comes out of the woodwork and doesn't care about it. They never cared about the person that was harmed in a self-defense shooting because they were stealing from someone or breaking into their house or doing something wrong where they shouldn't have been doing it. What we see is the family comes out and they just bankrupt. They bankrupt that person. And this actually puts up makes the playing field turn around here, because what happens that a lot of these trial lawyers they'll work for these people pro bono because they're looking for a big win. And so I'm on and against the amendment, and I'd like to call for the ayes and noes.
Okay, the ayes and noes have been called for. Further discussion. Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1. To Senate File 71. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Flader?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Case, I to no.
Ellis,
I
to no.
Kinski, I to no.
Nethercott,
I to no. Pappas, I to no. Anderson, I to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 7 I, 23 no.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 71 has failed. Senate File 71 having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a 3rd time? Here, no objections. So ordered. Senator Coe, there's someone behind you. Would you mind doing an introduction? Sitting right behind you. Before I have to leave and go... Senator Coe.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, sir, you may.
Gives me great pride to introduce one of my favorite people in the world. That would be your wife, Mr. President, Lorraine Bebout, right here, who's joining us. Came back from Tucson with Eli last night. Welcome, Lorraine Bebout.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, go ahead.
Mr. President, it's 12:30. We need to go eat lunch or something. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask you, Mr. President, if you knew where your wife is from and where she went to school, what county?
Senator Perkins, I do know the answer to those questions. And in Natrona,
yeah.
County High School, I won't say the year. But it was a while ago, and she's from Natrona County, obviously.
Thank you. Yay!
Natrona County. Well, welcome to the Senate. Thank you, Senator Coe. You saved my marriage by doing that. Okay. Do we have a motion, Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
You know, I don't know. Yeah, let's adjourn until... excuse me, not adjourn. Let's recess until... It's 12:30. Let's recess until 2.
Okay. Any announcements? Go ahead, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a point of privilege and announcement on lunch, may I?
Yes, you may.
Down in L-51, the folks from the northeast corner have a nice lunch prepared for us, Integrated Test Center, and they're hoping that while... It's a little late that we go down there and take a good look at it. They've gone to a lot of work, and they'd also like to share their ideas and progress.
Thank you. Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will be meeting 30 minutes. Let's meet at 1 o'clock to, and that will be in Jonah Room S-19, take up House Bill 4, Investment of State Funds Amendments, and House Bill 72, Engrossed Ad Valorem Tax Collections.
Okay. Senator Burns?
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet down at Jonah Room L-55, the JAC meeting room, in, let's say, 1 o'clock, and please be prompt, where we will take up House Bill 110, Wyoming Retirement Plans Member Accounts, and also please bring your cheat sheet for the budget bill. We'll go over that and have a little explanation on that, too.
Further announcements. The Senate will stand in recess to the sound of the gavel, which will be around 2 o'clock.